This is Carl the Jackal Frampton.
Hi, this is David Healy.
Hello, this is Stephen Ferris.
Hi, I'm Bethany Ferris.
My name is Shola Amiobi.
I'm Jonas Gutierrez.
Hi, this is Harry Kuehl.
You're listening to The Score.
The Score with Michael Clark. I'm a man.
Hello and welcome along to The Score with me, Michael Clark. Here's what's coming up on this week's programme. With just 10 games remaining for the majority of teams in the Sports Direct Premiership, who is going to go and win the title from here? Third place Cliftonville find themselves 3 points behind league leaders Larne, and after their Saturday game against Glenavon, they'll be playing second place Linfield at Solitude on Tuesday. Can they continue to climb? Cliftonville assistant manager Jared Little is on the way in a couple of minutes' time. We'll also be looking further down the table to 8th place Carrick Rangers. They take on 10th Dungannon Swifts. 3 points separate them. A win for Carrick Rangers could move them into the top half of the table, but defeat would see them slip down. Who is going to be the happier, not just this weekend, but by the end of the season? From Carrick Rangers, we'll be chatting to Andy Mitchell. He scored that great goal against Glentoran in their draw there last weekend. And we'll also have sports journalist Mark McIntosh on the programme a little later to give us his predictions. Who's going to win the league? Who's going to crack the top half? And who is going to fall short of survival? It's all coming up right here on The Score.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Now it is time to get our first guest of the programme onto The Score, and I'm very pleased to say, welcome him back onto the show, one and all, the assistant manager of Cliftonville, Jared Little. Jared, how are you?
I'm very well, Michael. Keeping well. What about yourself?
I'm doing brilliantly. It's lovely to have you back on the programme, and well, isn't Cliftonville doing very well? You must be really pleased with how this season is going so far.
Listen, we are, Michael. You know, we've worked extremely hard. You know, all the, I suppose the whole club. You know, certainly, you know, the coaching staff, Jim, and right down from myself, Ricky, and Rob, Gary. You know, everyone. You know, we're just all pulling together, and I suppose we have a way of how we like to do things and how we like to play and train, and I think everyone so far has bought into it, and obviously you can see by, you know, the performances on the pitch, certainly from the players. So, you know, so far so good.
And going into this weekend now with 10 games left to go, 3 points off the league leaders, I'm sure that's a position you would have bitten anyone's hand off had they offered it to you at the beginning of the campaign.
Most definitely. You know, obviously when Jim and I come in, you know, it was a wee bit, well, there was, I don't think we had everyone's approval around sort of the Cliftonville side of sort of support, but I'm glad now we've come in, and obviously, you know, there's a lot of positivity around, you know, everywhere, I suppose, you know, in terms of the supporters and stadium and everyone involved. So like I say, listen, we've come in, and you know, we've got ourselves sort of dirty, if you like, in terms of rolling our sleeves up and working hard and implementing ideas that we thought that would suit, you know, the players that we had available and it's worked. You know, they say we've implemented a sort of 3-5-2 style of play, and you know, some young players have come in and done really well, and some experienced players also has bought into it and done really well also. So if we continue working like that with that mindset throughout, you know, it bodes well for the future of Cliftonville, I suppose.
We had Jim on a while ago, and he spoke about what it was like for him in terms of the early ridicule even before he was appointed, and he joked about, you know, he thought it was his brother maybe putting up some of the banners, but he was an outsider to Cliftonville. You're not an outsider to Cliftonville, so what was that like for you to sort of see how everything was being perceived before anyone had, you know, signed on the dotted line, as it were?
listen, you can say it doesn't affect you, it doesn't hurt you, it doesn't annoy you. Of course it does. But I think, you know, when you become a manager, you sort of, you work on your sort of mentality of being thick-skinned, and don't take, you know, sort of too much to heart. You know, but the only side of that, I think, you know, it can have a negative effect on a team. You know, I've been there, obviously, as a player, Clubmill. I was there as a, you know, a coach under the great Tommy Breslin and Peter Murray, and then became a manager, you know, taking over from then. And I suppose, you know, it was my first job, and I thought I'd done well, enjoyed it. And circumstances at that stage was extremely hard, you know. It was a team that was, I suppose, aging, and it was a rebuilding phase. And then obviously the opportunity had come up when Sligo had offered me a full-time role, which I always stated that that's where my intentions was. And when I went, listen, you look back and you know, maybe a little bit of an experience in terms of how things went, how I'd left and all the rest of it, it didn't go down too well with obviously some supporters. But I think, you know, the important thing is, certainly for me, is, you know, this is my livelihood. It's Jim's livelihood. You know, we don't have anything else. You know, we're not electricians or plumbers or sales executives or anything like that. So, you know, our income is through our football, and you know, it's our day to day job. And obviously, we are obsessed with it. And you know, it's good to be back. You know, we took a bit of stick, but we took it in the chin. Certainly, I took it in the chin, and I told Jim, you know, when he came in, that they sort of get too caught up in everything, and obviously we'll do our talking, you know, once we get in and on the pitch. And I think, you know, certainly now we've done that, and we've maybe bought a few over, and say long may I continue.
I am just imagining now calling a plumber and you and Jim arriving at the door. That would be a shock, wouldn't it?
Well, listen, I suppose I'd probably do all the work, and Jim would be going, yeah, do that, Jared, you know, because Jim's one of the ones that doesn't like to get his hands dirty, but likes to bark his orders out, suppose, a little bit. So I don't think it'll be more fights. You know, we fight the bit out, Jim and I, but we understand each other, and obviously we have the same beliefs, and we have a good working relationship, suppose, in terms of, you know, what we want and how we do things. You know, he gives me full rein on mostly everything anyway, which is brilliant. And again, it works for both of us.
That is a really interesting thing to hear, because, you know, not everyone that has been a manager can be an assistant manager. It's a different role, and working with anybody, you have to kind of, you know, have compromises in there and understand each other. What is working with Jim Magilton like? You could go really anywhere with this answer, and I know Jim's personality, so what is it like working with Jim Magilton?
An absolute nightmare. Absolute nightmare. Your worst nightmare you could ever have, Michael. No, honestly, again, a lot of people ask me that, and I know in the past, you know, a lot of people have sort of found it, I don't know if this is a compliment or not, but found it difficult working with Jim in terms of, you know, his demands. But certainly, you know, from came back to Northern Ireland days, you know, I am very grateful to Jim. You know, when I left Sligo, it was a kick in the teeth for me, you know, coming back, and there's not too many jobs in this country, you know, become available at sort of at the level I've been used to working at. And, you know, Jim invited me in to work with some of the young up and coming stars of this country, and then sort of it evolved from there in terms of our relationship and working relationship. And you know, the next minute I was in working full time as an academy manager, and obviously got the under 17s and under 19s job, and it just sort of grew from there. And you know, we got to know each other, obviously working day to day in the academy setup, and you know, he seen me on the pitch loads, and seen how I coached and seen how I managed sort of players. And you know, at the end of the day, Jim's the manager at Clubmill. You know, he has the final say, he makes the final decisions, and obviously, you know, he's the one that, you know, if it doesn't go well, we'll probably get reprimanded more than I will. So, you know. But in terms of working together, you know, we share the same beliefs. You know, we like to play football the right way. You know, we like to put, you know, sort of structures in place and plan and be professional and obviously have high standards. And, you know, it's everything that, you know, the two of us share. So that makes things easier, Michael, for certainly me, working alongside, you know, Jim. And you know, as I say, he lets me get on with things. You know, he lets me, you know, basically take 90% of the sessions along with Ricky McCann and Big Rob, a goalkeeping coach. So, and Jim just manages sort of from the outside, sort of in and oversees, you know, things. And if there's something he's not happy with, obviously, you know, Jim's personality, and that'll be long telling you. And if there's something that he wants to sort of change or look at, you know, he'll run it by us and share that, and then we'll put something together and see where it goes. So it's really good. I've always enjoyed working with Jim. And if it didn't, you know, I certainly wouldn't have been, you know, part of being his assistant at Cliftonville. Yes, it's a strange sort of thing for me because I've been managing. But as I say, I think at the stage where I was, you know, going from sort of Cliftonville to Sligo to managing at international, it's been okay, you know, this season in terms of taking a little step back and reevaluating things and obviously being on the pitch again more and sort of taking sessions rather than managing. I think it's the timing's been fine for me, you know, so far.
And you can see where both of you have been able to use your experience with some of the really talented young players that are emerging in this country with regards to how you have recruited and put faith in some young players coming through the club as well. That's something that supporters are always excited to see, is that opportunity, but they have to be of standard, and you've made that very clear from the outset.
Yeah. Well, again, it's what we share as well. You know, we've always been very much in the giving youth players a chance if they're good enough. You know, it doesn't matter what age they are. And again, it's, you know, I'll go right back to, you know, my first managerial job at Cliftonville, giving Aaron Donnelly his debut at 16. He's obviously at Larne now. You know, I had no fear in doing that. You know, I think it was his debut was at Windsor Park at Linfield. So, and Jim's the same. You know, we have no fear whatsoever of throwing kids in. You know, I think someone it couldn't believe. I think it was Mark Smith actually had mentioned to me that, you know, he couldn't believe that, you know, during a Carrigar recently when we were at 0-0, we end up throwing a 16-year-old on, you know, to try him on as a game and change a game in young Ran Carrigan, rather than a tried and trusted senior player. So that's where we are. We'll always be like that. We'll never change, I suppose, you know. And I think for me, there's no point having a youth structure and academies and clubs and bypassing them by going, you know, with always experienced players or older players or whatever. So I always feel when you have a bit of youth in your team or in your squad, it gives you that different type of energy and sort of unknown as well. So we'll continue doing that. You know, we do both have an advantage of youth in this country in terms of knowing them inside out, because we've worked with them for the last sort of 5-6 years and we kind of know what's coming through and what young players have won away and what young players are coming back. So again, that's another added advantage that we have at Cliftonville.
And when you look through the profile of the team, it is a very young side, isn't it? You know, I'm curious, how much do you have to lean on those older players? Because we always talk about the advantage of experience, or maybe is it the case that the players maybe in their late 20s have that experience as well, and they're just getting that opportunity to lead a little younger?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important that also when you are developing and bringing young players through, that you have decent senior players as well, where they can look up to and who set examples and set standards. You know, if you have one or two bad senior players and young players are coming through and looking up to them and they're sort of giving out the wrong message or looking at them in terms of how they train poorly or how they prepare, you know, for games, then that becomes an absolute disaster. So that's important that, you know, you do have the right sort of blend of senior players mixed in with some young players. Otherwise, as I say, the future, you know, of your team or your club, you know, it wouldn't go well. So, you know, we're fortunate enough to have really good senior players there. You know, we, like Sir Rory Hale, you could call him a senior player who's still young, you know, who's played at international level. He's had a few clubs. He's now, you know, a local lad. He trains really well, plays really well, obviously. His brother Ronan, you know, Joe Gormley, Chris Kern. You know, you could go right through, you know, a few others are that, you know, are really good pros who look after themselves, prepare right, and obviously do their talking on the pitch. So that's important. They obviously developing young players and your team, I think.
And naturally, with that always comes speculation. So about where they'll end up with ambitious young players, people want to get a hold of them, and it seems like there's never done being paper talk about several of the players. You know, Ronan Hale, certainly, in my own personal opinion, has the talent to play across the water. Will you eventually have a fight on your hands to keep a hold of the likes of Ronan?
Well, listen, Ronan's experienced that. You know, I remember Ronan as far back when he was at Clevenwell as a young kid. And again, it's the game, you know, why we love it so much. Game opinions. I can't remember who was taking him as a youth team manager. I think he may have been only under 14, under 15, and I was working under Tommy, and I knew one of the, obviously know his family well, and I was taking him for some personal sort of one-to-one just to keep him happy because he wasn't getting in the team. And then he left and went to Crusaders, and then next minute he was playing for Birmingham City. And again, Ronan probably should have been or could have been still at Birmingham. I think it was Ronan's decision to come back himself rather than the club. He was a bit homesick. So for me, Ronan has all the tools, all the minerals to be, you know, and still a player at full time. Whether he wants that or not, you know, he's settled here. He has a young family here. You know, he's happy. He's playing with a smile on his face. You know, we've come in. Ronan was flying in pre-season, got an injury. I think it was the week before, you know, season started, and set him back. But he's worked extremely hard to get his fitness. I mean, I said to him actually last week how well he looked in terms of his fitness levels. He looked really trim. He looked sharp. You know, we've got him now sort of pressing teams where Ronan probably didn't have the not the capability or the desire, but you know, because he was such a player that sort of played on the shoulders and sort of came alive when the ball was sort of in possession of us. We've now got him working out of possession, and now for me he's added to his game, and he's playing as with a team, you know, as a team player rather than just for Ronan Hale. So again, that's massive for us and massive for our team and massive for, you know, for success of any team when you have, you know, players like that.
Yeah, it's huge. And speaking of huge, your next couple of games are huge as well. If you win both of them, they're both at home in Glenavon this Saturday, and then on Tuesday, the small feat of playing against Linfield, but find yourself in a position where win your matches and you go top of the league, at least for the time being. We're in this part of the season now where, you know, literally it feels like nobody can falter, and everyone probably will because of the nature of it. Those matches against the top half teams have proven your downfall at times in the campaign. How confident are you that in the games coming up you'll be able to correct that and give yourselves the best chance possible?
Look, I think in them games, you know, yes, we were very aware, and we spoke about it as a group, and you know, and listen, for me, you know, and any sport, I suppose any way of life, Michael, you need a rubber of cream sometimes and a little bit of luck going in your favour. And I think in previous games, you know, that hasn't been the case. You know, we certainly the last game against Linfield, you know, we completely dominated the game. But Linfield being Linfield, and fair play to them, you know, they're renowned for it. You know, David, you know, he's been one of the great managers in the league for many years. You know, they grinded out a 1-0 win. You know, we could have had a penalty decision went in our favour, or didn't go in our favour that time, and you know, we scored that, you know, anything can happen. But we've made one mistake and get punished for it as Linfield too. So you know, the games before that, you know, even against Glentoran and that, you know, we've had decisions hadn't went our way. And then Lauren, we were very good at home the first game, and you know, we've took a lead and conceded a penalty, you know, and so these are little sort of moments and margins, you know, that, you know, can go in your favor or go against you. And certainly, I think in them particular games, they haven't favored us. So all we can do is just, you know, take care of our own business and obviously prepare, you know, as we do for every game. You know, first focus will be obviously Glenavon this Saturday, which is a tough game. You know, they're coming off the back of a fairly decent result with a draw at Linfield. You know, they haven't, I don't think, have been sort of winning games previously, yeah, but playing a good brand of football with Stevie coming in. We know Stevie well, Jim and I, so we know what to expect from them. You know, we're going to have a tough game, and then obviously after that, you know, we'll look at the Linfield game and prepare again and analyse, you know, where we're going to go and put a game plan together. And hopefully, you know, with a bit of luck, you know, we come out, you know, in the positive end of maybe getting something better than what we've done previously against Linfield.
And just finally, I'm curious always about the mentality or approach in this run now, because everyone's going to say, you know, 10, 9, we're in the countdown stage really of the season. Does preparation change? Do team talks change? Because the pressure ramps up. So I'm curious, do you just try and keep it as normal, or do you have to adapt to the environment that you're in now, which is really, you know, like a run of cup finals?
Yeah, well, listen, every each week changes, you know, for through different reasons. You know, it can be, obviously this week we've Oran Casey out, who's suspended. So we've got to adapt to that and look at, obviously, bringing a player in who's completely different style of Oran. So that's thrown at you, and that's something you have to deal with. In terms of anything else, in terms of preparation, team talks, you know, you can't change. You know, why change? You know, everything that we've done so far is working for us and has worked. You know, obviously there's certain things that, you know, are thrown at you, some setbacks or even during games that you have to adapt and look at and tinker with. But again, you know, in terms of preparation, in terms of mentality, in terms of team talks and you know, training sessions and things like that, that stays the same. You know, obviously this month we have a few sort of Saturday Tuesday games, which isn't ideal in terms of, you know, where we are, although we've got the boys in and we've changed that. That's something we've changed this year is 3 nights training, you know, to get them used to, you know, the extra night and in terms of their fitness levels and getting an extra bit of sort of tactical work done with them, where they haven't sort of done that before. So we have periodized our season and our sessions around, you know, trying to be as close to full time but not full time, if that makes sense. And work it that way. You know, we've changed our Monday night, our Wednesday night sort of under 20 games to Monday night, so boys who don't play on a Saturday, you know, we're topping up their minutes, and then we have a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday session throughout the week, and then Friday sort of our sort of minus one, and prepare for game, and then Saturday's our game, Sunday recover. So all that stays the same. You know, we don't change anything, and we'll continue with that throughout the season. And again, hopefully it works for us, and then obviously season ends, we'll evaluate things and look to see what's worked and what hasn't worked throughout the season, and then we'll look to go again.
Brilliant insight, Jared. Really loved having you on the programme this week. Thanks so much for coming on.
No, you're very welcome, Michael. Thanks for having me.
The Score with Michael Clark.
The great guests just keep on coming here on The Score. Let's all say a big hello to our next one from Carrick Rangers. Did you see his worldie last weekend against Glentoran? Helped Carrick in their comeback performance from 2-0 down to draw 2-2. Of course, I'm referring to Andy Mitchell. Andy, how are you?
Yes, I'm good, Michael. Nice to speak to you again. I'm very well, thank you.
Even better after that goal. You fairly hit it.
That guy... just one of them ones where you ball falls nice here, and Ned's is obviously, I've been screaming at Ned's for about 10 seconds before, and he set it nice and usually at the oval they take a bobble and they go into the easy jet stand, but I was happy to see it rocket in the net, and obviously it was couldn't really celebrate much because it was only 2-1 at the time, but I'm pretty sure I think it gave us a wee lift, and it obviously went on to draw the game. But no, as a sum it up, you close the eyes, you put your laces straight, and you hope you're waiting on the chair, and thankfully it did.
most of us do the first part. The next bit usually doesn't come for us, but very well done. It was interesting hearing Stuart King speak after the game. I was listening to his interview on the radio, and he said, "Hold my hands up, got the first half wrong. We made a couple of changes in terms of how we were doing things, and thankfully the players responded." What was that halftime team talk like?
He was calm, which would be a surprise. He was quite calm. He took the onus. He did take the onus, to be fair to him. But in saying that, I think there's enough senior lads in that dressing room, and I know he bangs on about it all the time, but there's enough senior lads in that dressing room, and to be fair, we sat down on Tuesday there and done a sort of post match analysis on the goals, and when you watch them back, there's again, we could have done better as players on the pitch. Albeit we just probably showed them a bit too much respect, and that's probably just where we are at the minute. We're starting games with a wee bit of tension on our shoulders, because obviously that sort of six spots off for place, six, seven spot, and you're also probably looking below you to think, are we safe yet? So I think there's 4 points separate between six and 10, so it probably sums up our season in terms of we've been really inconsistent all year, and when we're good, we've been really good. And when we're bad, we've been really bad. So yeah, it's just a wee bit of tension from our end. But on the pitch, we probably should have solved it. But to answer your question, he was dead on at halftime. In fairness to him, he made the switch, he made the change, he brought Tillian on. We bit more direct and got down the sides of him, and sort of changed it a 4-3-3, which helped us massively. We had two outlets in Nettis and James E. Tillian, and thankfully we managed to get back into the game and went on to get a decent draw out of it.
Carrick Rangers fans, I'm sure, still do pinch themselves looking at the attacking options available. Wasn't always the case. They might have had one or maybe two good forwards, but when you look at the amount of attacking players there are now at Carrick's disposal, there's certainly options for where goals might come from. In terms of James Tielan, he's been pretty clear that he wants to use this to help springboard him to hopefully what he'll want to be a very successful time at Crusaders. He wasn't really getting too many opportunities there when he arrived, so he's on loan with yourselves. How's he settled into the group?
Yeah, he's a great kid, first and foremost. You can just tell by someone straight away, and the type of person he is, he can tell he's a great kid. Obviously, he gives us still nightmares from last year. I think he scored about four or five goals passes in two or three games. So we know his quality. He's a massive outlet for us on the pitch. But no, he settled in great with the lads. He's a quiet lad. He gets in, he does his work. And hopefully Kai can be the springboard to kick him on, and we'll use him just as much as he'll need us. And if he doesn't go back to the Crews, and I'm pretty sure there'll be a nice wee incentive for him at Carrick, and he'll be welcome back to us in no time, I'm sure. But no, he's a good lad. He's a great lad, and it's always nice to add to our dressing room, because as you said there, we're a real tight knit dressing room with real good senior pros in around the place. We've built a good wee culture in there, and yeah, Jamesy just adds that. So no, we've welcomed him with open arms, and it was great to see him come on at half time there and get his wee cameo and give us all a lift. So no, I'm delighted for him. I'm glad he's on board, and hopefully he kicks on now and does well and gets us to where we need to be.
In terms of what Carrick Rangers was like when you arrived to where it is now, I know it's a pretty short space of time, but I'm curious to hear how you view the change, if you view there to be a change. Couple of seasons ago, Carrick Rangers were very much a team that were used to having to yo-yo up a season, back down, up. Now, well, last year they were talking about safety, and now it seems to be there's a bigger goal again. That was clearly what you were sold when you came in, but I'm curious as to how you've experienced it. Do you see this as a club that's growing?
Yeah, a million percent. Again, obviously we've got the new owner in, and there's real good people at that football club. I said it before, it's and you've been around it yourself, Michael. It's a real family club. It's a real tight-knit club. The people in it work tremendously hard to make it what it is. In terms of when I first came in, it's one of the ones where you're looking at from the outside in, and you play against Carrick and Taylor's Avenue away, and can you do it in Taylor's Avenue in an old dirty Tuesday night, and the pitch can't be great sometimes, and it's just a real tight wee ground, and just typical Irish League ground. And again, from afar, you never like going to it, and that was always the perception of it. Now teams are probably looking at us going, it's that, plus they've got good quality in their team. You've mentioned before our attacking threat, and we rely on them massively. The likes of Danny, Neds, Curtis, James E. Tilly, and I add into it. Again, it's quite surreal when you think about it, our attacking options. So yeah, the change that Sturdy's made, and Scotty and the club, has been, it's been actually nothing short of brilliance. If I'm being honest, you look around our dressing room and you've now got league winners in that dressing room. You've now got senior games through your yin yang. There's a real tight knit, good, experienced dressing room. But now Sturdy's starting to add real quality to it, and now you're looking around going, you know what, we just need a wee bit more belief here, and we have a serious chance here of kicking on again. And great credit to Sturdy, because he harped on about it, and he harps about it every week, that he wants to take the club places, and the 2 years that I've been there, and it's kicked on massively, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well. It's superb, and it's a great thriving club to be around, and everything's on the up, and it's down to us players to keep driving the forward and keep adding to it, and making sure that the expectation on us is proving what it's worth. So no, it's brilliant. It's brilliant to be a part of, and again, I'm going to put it back to the dressing room. It's a great dressing room to be in. You actually look forward to going there every day and training, and it's superb. So long may it continue. We'll just keep looking up.
You've already alluded to it, how competitive that bottom half of the table is. You know, the fight for whether you want to talk about sixth or seventh, obviously the opportunity to be in Europe is really what it all boils down to. But Loughall and Coleraine on 32, Carrick Rangers 31, Glenavon on 30, they have a game in hand. Dungannon and Swifts, who you play this weekend, on 28. And Rodney McAree was very quick to say to me, you know, as much as people are saying, you know, is that you safe, they don't want to be looking over their shoulder, they want to be looking forwards now and trying to climb the table too. And they gave Crusaders one heck of a game last weekend, so everybody is kind of fighting for that same goal. And it's weird where everyone feels pretty positive, and yet by the end of it, someone's going to have to feel like they've missed out somewhere. So it's going to be some fight, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. And you said it yourself, they're all saying they're not looking over their shoulder, but I think there is an element of them four teams thinking, right, can we get safe? I think once someone sort of slips up and people know they're safe, you'll probably see the real shackles come off and people kick on. There's obviously that tension around first for a lot of club, in terms of you've got clubs really looking to nip that wee sixth and sort of seventh spot into European, and then who knows what happens in them European playoffs. I've been in many of them. I've been in a couple of Alarni, and obviously I was involved in the Ronan Hale goal where he hit it for his 18-yard box. We were 2-0 down at half time, and Ronan Hale comes on, scores three goals. So anything can happen. It's just getting there. And as you said, they're all 6-pointers now. Every single game is a 6-pointer, and 4 points separating, as you said, between 10th and 6th spot. It's huge. And again, probably with Coleraine having their wee off season, it's probably give 3 or 4 a chance. And to be fair to Loughall, they've actually capitalised massively in this season. They've been a breath of fresh air in the league, and they're making other teams kick on, likes of ourselves. And then you've got the likes of Ballymena, who again is sort of, if they get a win, they're now bumping into sort of 20 odd points, and you're now looking at them, and you're now, every club and every player now are now looking at the fixtures. Who have we got? Is it home or is it away? It's really exciting for players. It's nervous, but it's really exciting. So no, the running will be a cracker. Obviously everybody will be focused on the who's going to clinch it and who's going to get the first spot and second spot and all goes with it. But from our end, it's who can get the sixth spot and who can push into this playoff time for the first, which would be, it would be massive for Carrick. Honestly, we're not overly talking about it in the dressing room, but you sort of know it's in the back of your mind, and you know it's only around the corner. So we've a couple of games here to really kick on and put as many points on the board before we ever get in the top six or bottom six split. So no, we're really excited. It's exciting times, not just for us, but for the league and for all the clubs in the round.
And because there's stuff to play for, it means that naturally it's only human, there'll be a wee bit of nerves, and it's a different type of feeling then going into those games. You know, sometimes you get to this stage in the season, you might have nothing to play for, and you can go out and every game can be like a game of basketball if you want it to be, and sure, who cares, it's entertaining. Whereas because there's stuff still going on, you've got that in the back of your head as well. I wonder, you know, when it comes to this part of the season, how much you need to kind of give a wee bit extra to those younger players to get them through games. Yes, they might have all that extra energy that everybody looks for in the crucial moments, but you've been there and done it.
yeah, and hopefully the big game players and the players that have won leagues and Irish Cups and played so many games in the league in our dressing, hopefully you're right, Michael, hopefully that can help, and hopefully we have that over the other teams where hopefully the tension and the nerves don't get the better of us, because as you said, there's a few of us that have been there, albeit we're in the end of the season and some of our boys like myself can't last up to 38 games now, so hopefully it's not the case, and hopefully, yeah, you're right, hopefully the nervous just goes off our shoulders and we can take the shackles off and really push the club on, kick the club on, and to be honest, I'm quite confident we can go on and do it, and I'm quite confident within our dressing room, within the group of lads and the wee run of rich vein we're on, hopefully we can nip into it, and it would be a great achievement for us, for our club, and as I said, it would kick us on in fourfold. So no, it is, it's really exciting, I'm looking forward to it, and it's, as you said, you get the end of the season and you're right, can we get safe? Once you're safe, it's like nothing really to play for, and you're probably thinking about where you're going holidays, and you're booking holidays and you're talking to others about where you're going. Now we're actually looking at the table going, hey, we've four games to get out of what we can and hopefully push into that European playoff spot, and then let's see where it takes us. So yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting for the club. And hopefully as lots of players we can go on and do it for everybody.
And just before I let you go, I want to talk about your coaching as well. Congratulations, you're Larne under-18s. You've got to the Harry Cavan Youth Cup final. That's a brilliant success, I would assume, when things are going that well. You're enjoying it.
Yeah, off. And again, I wake up every day and I go into this environment, Larne, and I have to pinch myself sometimes. I'm in a real privileged position in this country to be a sort of full-time role in coaching and getting the best of both worlds about playing at the minute. But no, I remember speaking to you last time, I've well and truly got the coaching bug. I love it. I love coming every day. I love helping my kids and trying to get them exposure, trying to get them first team training, trying to get them first team debuts. It's what every kid dreams of when you grow up, to go on and be a footballer, and I was thankful enough and lucky enough to experience that as a kid. But from a coach now, and again, you can put on all the good sessions of the day or your bad sessions, and you can do your badges, but there's probably no better feeling in coaching than when the first team manager comes up to you and says that I need four players a day, and you're able to go to a kid and say to him, listen, you're up training the first team a day, or even better, where he rings you on a Friday night, he says, listen, Mitch, I need a left back for tomorrow for the bench, and you then ring the parents and the player, and you're able to tell them that again, you're going to be on the bench for the first team tomorrow, you're in the squad, and you see the smiles in their faces, and you can see, because to be honest, I work with these lads every day, they give up a lot for me, they work so hard in training, and they come in every day to this environment, and it is a tense environment. They see professional players, they see professional players all come in every day and do really well, and they want to be them players. So it's up to me to manage that expectation, but it's also up to me to push them on and get every single ounce of them, that when they do get that chance, they're ready. So yeah, I'm loving the coaching. It's superb. It's the next best thing to plan, and I understand that. And I understand that my days are going to be limited, hopefully, in the next year or two. Maybe hopefully I can kick on. Surely won't want to hear that, but I'm trying to balance both at the minute. I'm trying to give me all the Carrick and give me all the Larne coaching role. And to be fair, this year, as you said, it's paid off. I think getting the Harry Cavan final for our scholarship program for our club is absolutely huge. I was told the club had never done it before, and I'd done a bit of research, and I think in 1977, I think the Jim Higgins of this world, I managed to find that they actually got the Harry Cavan final, albeit they didn't win it. So I told my lads four rounds before that you're going to be the first ever team to get the Harry Cavan final, and that was the carrot. I have to go back and tell them you're actually the second, but you could be the first to win it. So it's massive for them. It's good exposure for them. People still talk about Harry Cavan finals when they're in their older years. So it's a real prestige trophy, and I'm up against obviously big Jordan Owens, hopefully, and Jimmy Callagher and Davey Rennie, who have all sort of played with, and they all know. So there's a wee bit of tension there, and there's a wee bit of bragging rights, but. Listen, it's all for the players. It's all for our lads, and hopefully they can go on and make a good account of themselves. And on the day, hopefully we get over the line and we manage to lift it. It would be brilliant for them.
Yes, Crusaders, your opponents. And I tell you what, anyone that wants to go along to that, that'll make us all feel older and go, no, hold on, what are they doing managing? Sure, they're all players, but what's happened?
I know, and that's what's happening now, Michael. Obviously, there's a lot of good players in the country now who are taking their coaching badges, and when you go and do them coaching badges, you're able to see faces. And I remember last year my coaching badges, I shared it with Chris Ramsey, Derek Goodell, Chris Casement. So seeing them boys around you, now I'm going to games, and now it's us against each other in the touchline, and it can be just as feisty as when you play against each other. I think that can give me my two scars under my eyes and his two elbows. Now we're pulling the head of each other in the sideline. So it's all good. It's brilliant. But yeah, hopefully as you say, the Harry Cavan Cup final, hopefully we can go and make a good account of ourselves and go over the lines for the lads. It would be surreal.
Well, at least with your research, you've got an extra team talk out of it now, guys. It's not good enough being here. Now you have to go and win the thing, no pressure. But brilliant. No, fantastic having you on, Andy. Well done on that early success, and best of luck for the final. I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again in the not-too-distant future. But for now, thank you very much for coming on to The Score.
Thanks for having me, Michael. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you.
The Score with Michael Clark.
And I believe that final's going to be in April. We'll wait and see for confirmation on the final date of the Harry Cavan final between Larne and Crusaders under 18s. Now, last but not least, our final guest of the programme this week is going to give us his insight into how it's all going to end up. That's the question we're all asking ourselves with 10 games to go in the Premiership. Who's going to win it? Who's getting into Europe? And who is going to beat the drop? Hopefully, he will have some of the answers. Mark McIntosh is back on the show. Mark, how are you?
I'm good, Michael. Thanks for having me, mate.
Great to speak to you once again. And before I get your thoughts on where we're going, what are your thoughts on where we are at? Have you enjoyed the league so far?
Yeah, it's been a fascinating season yet again. It's certainly competitive. We've got a three-horse race at the top, as people know. We've got a fascinating, probably, battle for the playoff places, and at the bottom, it's a hard one to call. So, I mean, there's something to play for, I think, for every club in the league at the moment, which I don't think you can ask for much more than that.
No, it is drama at every single turn at the moment. Just look at the way Saturday went, with the majority of the games finishing 2-2 with late goals and moments that all of a sudden change how the league is looking. From last week's show, we have a different league leader now in Larne. And let's start at the top. You know, they're on 67 points. They are looking strong. They're the defending champions. Can anybody stop them from here?
Look, it's going to be difficult. They came into the season with a huge target on their back, and they knew that, winning their first league title in their history. They're the club that everyone wants to beat now. They'll know what Linfield probably have gone through for all those years. But to be fair to Larne, they made a bit of a slow start, which was probably not a great surprise. There are a few players left, a few new players came in, so you expected they maybe would have a few teething problems, but we've seen they've got players back to full fitness in recent weeks. We all know that their front three will score goals. They score goals from all over the pitch. And I'm not surprised at all, because, Tiernan Lynch has shown in recent transfer windows too, he's very astute, certainly with the help of Gerry Flynn. And, bringing in the likes of Cricky Gallagher in January could prove an absolute masterstroke. And, we're only a few weeks really into the new year, and Larne have got top place back again, and they're going to take some beat.
Isn't it remarkable to think that 25% of the league goals that Larne have conceded in this campaign were in their first game against Dungannon?
It's bonkers, and anyone watched that game that night, certainly knows how bonkers the game was itself. But it just shows you the incredible record they have, And look, yes, people might say, yeah, they're a full-time club, so they should be like that. And there's an element of truth in that. They absolutely should. They're the ones that are able to work on it the most, along with Linfield. So it's no great surprise that the two of them are at the top of the table. But you have to give credit to Tiernan Lynch and his staff and the players, because, it's one thing being coach, but you have to go out and deliver. And, as we've seen in the last couple of years, Larne are certainly delivering.
And when you factor in the defensive problems in terms of personnel, clearly not performance, Want and Bulger were such a solid pairing. They haven't had that pairing this season, and it hasn't hampered them too much, so it really does stand to their testament. The other thing that you have to say is, looking at it, their head-to-heads against the big teams, when we are just, you know, a few matches away from the split, if they can replicate that form, they are going to be champions again.
Exactly. You know, they put themselves there. They're the ones to be beaten, like I said earlier. They've shown that they've taken the form from last year, and I don't think there's a single club in the country that fancies going to Inverpark, because you know exactly what you're going to get. Now, again, they showed maybe little frailties earlier in the season away from Inverpark, but, you know, it's such a fortress for them. And you're right, you know, the defensive injuries that they've had this season, you know, it's incredible what they've actually done and what they've achieved so far. And it just seems to be whoever comes into that side is so well drilled and knows exactly what their job is, and they just get on with business. It's fascinating how they've been able to do it in a relatively short space of time. And listen, I know people will probably, maybe some green-eyed monsters might you look at it and say, well, with all the money in the Larne, they should be doing that. It's never as easy as that. You know, ask any Glentoran fan. You know, they've spent a lot of money and haven't been able to produce the goods like this. So I think you have to give Larne so much credit. But, and it's a big but, it's all well and good being top at this stage of the season. They have to finish there. You know, that money, that ambition, and that drive from everyone at the club means they're there to win the league. They're not there to finish second and qualify for Europe again and just things like that. They are now a club who have to be serial winners. But all of the signs we're seeing so far is that's exactly what they're going to be.
And Linfield, what has happened? All of a sudden, their lead hasn't just shrunk, it's disappeared, and now they're a point behind. There's, as we all know, there's still plenty of time. There's 30 points for them to play for. But I'm sure there'll be a little bit of frustration, if not quite a lot of frustration, inside that camp that this has happened.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of frustration because, you know, they've had a good lead that's been whittled down, and obviously Larne have overtaken them now. But I don't think it's a massive surprise necessarily to a lot of Linfield fans, because, you know, I know David Healy got a little bit wound up a few weeks back when people were saying that Linfield were grinding out results, and I don't think David takes that too kindly when people say his team have, you know, been able to grind out a result, whereas actually I think it's a bit of a compliment. You know, I think to win league titles you have to grind out results sometimes. You can't play pretty free-flowing football every single game, but when you're doing that quite a lot, sometimes that'll have to eventually come to an end, or you have to spark into life. And I think a lot of Linfield fans have said for the last couple of months that they don't really look like sparking into life. And then you add in further complications. You know, they let a couple of players go towards the tail end of last year. You know, they left the club. And, you know, they brought in one player in January. You know, they brought in Ethan McGee. And as good as a player as he is, I don't think it's necessarily that one signing that's going to spark the team into life. Because, you know, like I said, if you look at the clubs around them, Larne are scoring goals. You know what their forward line is like. Cliftonville just behind Linfield. You know the goals that they've got. Whereas you look at Linfield, and yes, some very good players have scored goals down the years, but it's just that sort of group unit doesn't seem to be clicking at this moment in time. But look, history tells us that Linfield, when it comes to the running, Linfield can more often than not get the job done. But I think they've got a massive battle on their hands this season, and I think the January window will probably come back to bite them.
It makes tonight's game at Coleraine all the more important. There's huge amount of pressure on them going into that, off the back of a league defeat against Dungannon Swifts at Windsor Park at the end of January, and then the late leveller that they conceded at Mournview last weekend. They're looking at this game, they know they absolutely have to win, and it's a Coleraine team that have been struggling for form as well, so anything less than the Linfield win here, and there's going to be, I think, dissension amongst the ranks and their supporters.
Well, listen, there's no doubt about that. David Healy knows better than me. Like, when you're manager of Linfield, you know, you're only one game away from a crisis. And if Linfield don't pick up 3 points tonight, I'm sure a lot of people will think, right, there's something seriously wrong here. And I think that would be wide of the mark. You know, I don't think Linfield are as bad maybe as some people would let on. But look, they have to go to Corrine. They have to pick up 3 points because Larne and Cliftonville keep doing the business. You know, they're on their coattails. You know, Larne have overtaken them now, and Linfield know what they have to do. And again, in recent years, we've seen when Linfield have to get results, they normally do. I just think this wobble might concern David Healy slightly more, because normally when Linfield have had a wobble, it's been a very clear off day, and they've got terrific strikers and midfielders who can score goals. Just at this moment in time, though, I just don't see that firepower there. But if they go to Corrine and score a few goals, all of a sudden everything's fine again. It's a fascinating game, because you know we all know the Corrine this season have been up and down constantly, and you never quite know which Corrine you're going to get. But one thing Linfield know for sure is they never ever get it easy going to the Showgrounds. And I would say Linfield have to start the game very quickly tonight, and if they do get an early goal, then maybe Corrine heads will go down and Linfield can profit from that. But if it's an edgy game and the Linfield fans, you know, because I'm sure they'll be there in their massive numbers as usual, and if the Linfield fans start getting a bit edgy, then sometimes that can translate onto the pitch as well, and that's when things can maybe go wrong for the Blues.
I'll ask you your title predictions in a few minutes' time, but I want to move and look at, you know, some of the changes that people were wondering, would they come? Obviously, Corrine have had such a difficult time. They've very much stood by Oran Kearney through that. Glentoran fans haven't been happy. Warren Feeney still in his position and the club backing him. I don't know, did many people see that it would be Crusaders that would have the big announcement first, with Stephen Baxter saying at the end of the season he was going to call time on 19 years at the helm? We've discussed it in the last couple of weeks on the programme. Of course, an incredible manager, and what a legacy he will leave at that football club. But the questions now, and as the rumours swirl, who is going to be the person or the people to take over from him? And Mark, I don't know if you've any insider knowledge as to what's going on there. Have you been speaking to anyone at CV to find out who the favourites are?
I have been speaking to a few people, and I think the honest answer right now is they don't know. I think they're trying to work out what they want in terms of a management team more than the actual personality right now. My hunch is that they'll probably go for someone who's almost the opposite of what people think of Stephen Baxter in terms of playing style and all of that sort of thing. You know, because the club are at a crossroads here. Like, let's make no bones about it. The success that Stephen Baxter has brought to Crusaders is ridiculous. You know, they were on their knees when he came in, and he's built such a dynasty. He's won everything you can win, and he's won most of it several times over. But the reality is they're an ageing squad now. You know, we know that Paul Heatley's going to go at the end of the season as well, another absolutely iconic player in the Irish League in the last 15 years or whatever. And that squad's going to take some work in the summer. So any new manager coming in knows that. And look, listen, on paper, the Crusaders job is one of the best jobs in Irish League football. And, you know, the club have shown that they certainly back their managers. They give them time to get it right. And I think any new manager coming in has to be their own person. You know, there's no point getting in and trying to be what Stephen Baxter was, because, you know, Stephen is certainly a very unique manager and a unique man. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do. You know, will they go for someone with Irish League experience? Will they go for a younger manager, you know, who's maybe fancies himself as a bit of a coach? Or will they go for the motivator? You know, I think these are all the sort of questions that they're asking themselves right now. But look, listen, there'll be a lot of interest from outside of Northern Ireland as well, and that's going to be maybe one of the things. Do they take a punt on someone from outside Northern Ireland? My hunch is that they probably won't do that. They'll probably stick to someone who knows the league. But it's going to be fascinating. You know, there's some massive months coming up for the Crews in terms of the managerial appointment. But before all that, it's about qualifying for Europe, and, you know, they have to find a way to win the playoff.
Do you think there'll be more managerial movement in the league come the summertime, or is that what the next 10 games tell us?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot depends on that. And, you know, sadly, you know, I have to keep saying it, with Glentoran, you never quite know. You know, I don't think many people expected Ronnie McAree to leave at the end of last season, and that's what happened, and they brought in Warren Feeney. And, look, we all know that Warren's appointment wasn't exactly met by, you know, party poppers and the likes, some Glentoran fans, they certainly were never happy, and the last couple of weeks haven't really helped that. But if Warren Feeney was the end of the season with an Irish Cup in the cabinet, then I don't see how too many Glentoran fans can complain. I'm sure they will, because they still have made it very clear they don't want them as manager. But you know, I think slowly but surely Warren Feeney will do a good job at Glentoran if he's given that chance. And that's going to be the big question. You know, if they don't qualify for Europe or they don't win silverware, that's going to be a big question. And, you know, there'll be eyes on other people at the club then, because, you know, they made the appointment of Warren Feeney. They knew how it wasn't going to be popular. And that's why maybe questions are being asked of them now as well. So I think if you look around the league, there may be one or two changes, but I don't think it'll be wholesale.
Feels like, in terms of, you know, the playing squad, Crusaders going to make changes. Sounds like Glentoran have a lot of changes coming up with their playing staff, and it might well be the case at Coleraine, with it now would appear a couple of suitors in terms of their takeover aspirations, if that's the right way to word that. They probably one way or another just want a decision to be made, but you can't rush these things. You need to make sure that everything makes sense.
No, and look, any sort of takeover investment in a club is always going to take a lot longer than fans want. You know, maybe sometimes fans hear, you know, there's going to be a cash injection, they hear how much it's going to be, and they just want everything yesterday. And look, that's part of being a fan, and that's what you want. But, you know, it appears to be very close now. And as you said, you know, there's another interested party, but because of an exclusivity agreement, Coleraine aren't able to enter discussions with them. And it's a Canadian group who I don't think they've closed the door in terms of maybe investing in a different Irish League club, you know, if the original takeover goes ahead at Coleraine. So look, maybe someone else will benefit from that as well. And I think it's just a fascinating time for the league as well, because, you know, we've seen Carrick, you know, have investment, and we've seen obviously Coleraine hopefully very soon. We've seen what happened with Larne, we've seen Glentoran. I think it's great news throughout the league. And look, the more eyes and the more professionals on and off the pitch that come into our league, the better.
Hear, hear. And let's not forget about the battle at the bottom. I was at the, well, it didn't end up being a cracker, did it? It was such an important game. Maybe that was always going to be the case between Newry City and Ballymena United, frustrating each other to a 1-1 draw. And, you know, Newry City getting another draw on Tuesday against Loughall. 5 points between those teams. First prediction, really, for you here, Mark, is, can Newry City overhaul that? I mean, mathematically, of course they can, but do you think they will be able to get above Ballymena United between now and the end of the season?
In all honesty, I don't think they will. You know, I think the past week was massive for them. It was an opportunity to play against their closest rivals, maybe try and make up a bit of ground, and then they had the game in hand, and it was another opportunity, and they've wasted both, you know. I just think, you know, obviously their last game out there, you know, against Loughall, Adam Sally's missed penalty, you know, are they going to look back on that come the end of the season? Which would be very unfair to Adam as well, because if anyone looks like scoring goals to keep them up, it's probably going to be Adam. But I think they've missed a massive opportunity in the past week or so. And it's a very difficult position from where they're in, because I think there have been positive signs, certainly maybe of, but since Barry Gray came in, you know, results maybe haven't shown up, but there's been, you can see little sort of chinks of light. And I would say Ballymena probably are the same in recent weeks, probably for a little bit longer, and for that reason I would still fancy Ballymena to pick up more points even between now and the end of the season than Newry will. And it would be very sad if Newry were to finish bottom, because they're a fantastic club, but the reality is they just simply haven't been good enough this season.
Looking at the top half, who is your pick for that sixth spot? It looks like the top five have done enough by now. Who's going to be sixth? You've got Loughall and Coleraine level on points there at the moment. Carrick and Glenavon looking at it, and Dungannon and Swifts not too far behind either.
No, it's an incredible battle, let's be honest. And, you know, it's the one position that everyone wants, but it also looks like the one position nobody wants. You know, it's changing constantly. My hunch is that Coleraine will finish sixth, you know, and that's a very boring prediction, because that's kind of Coleraine's position. They finish sixth every year, certainly how it seems in recent times. But I think because of the quality Oran Kearney was able to bring in in the January window. I think they will eventually click properly, and I think they'll cement that place in the final 10 games.
Just for the benefit of any pedants that may exist out there, Glenavon and Glentoran are the two teams that have played 27 times, and they'll be screaming 11 every time I say 10 games to go. But I just thought I would make sure that I've catered for everybody. And Mark, finally, in a word, or in a team name to be more specific, who is going to win the league?
You know, it seems unfair that even in my mind when you ask me that, I'm ruling out Cliftonville, and I shouldn't do that because they've shown that they deserve to be in this title race and they deserve to be in that conversation. But I think most people will look at it and think it'll be Larne or Linfield. I wouldn't be surprised if Cliftonville run it really, really close. But I think just because of the additions that Tiernan Lynch was able to make and the fact that they might put a run together at the right possible time, I fancy Larne to retain the title.
Okay, going for Larne. Incidentally, imagine, and it's not a big if, Cliftonville were to finish second. That would fairly wind up whoever was to end up finishing third. They've such a big part to play in this. Even if they don't win the league, which they still could, they could cause some serious problems for someone else if they force them, inverted commas, all the way down to third.
Absolutely. You know, and it's fascinating everywhere you turn in this league at the moment. That's the thing. And I think even Larne will be full of confidence right now, but they know they have to stick to this. They have to keep doing what they're doing, because in the space of a couple of weeks, you can go from first to third, and then there's all sorts of different pressure. Linfield will obviously be feeling the pressure. They'll be looking over their shoulders at Cliftonville. You know, they might not say that, but that's absolutely what they'll be doing. It's not all about chasing Larne to try and get back to the top. They know Cliftonville are coming for them, and it filters the whole way down through the league. If you look, every single club, like I said earlier, has something to play for at the moment. And I don't think there's many leagues around Europe can say that.
We love it. We are here for it every step of the way on The Score. Mark McIntosh, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on to the show.
The Score with Michael Clark.
My thanks to Mark McIntosh, to Andy Mitchell and Jared Little for their company this afternoon. A quick reminder of the games taking place in the top flight. The Friday night action at the Corian Showgrounds, live on the iPlayer. Corian against Linfield. The Saturday games see Ballymena United host Larne. Carrick Rangers play Dungannon Swifts. Glenavon go to Solitude to face Cliftonville. At the Oval, it's Glentoran Newry City. And Loughgall have home advantage when they face Crusaders. The Saturday games are all 3 o'clock kickoffs. Cliftonville against Linfield is also live on the iPlayer. That is on Tuesday, kickoff 7:45 at Solitude. That's us. We are at the finish line once again, my friends. We'll be back next week to do it all again. But for now, all that remains to be said is enjoy your weekend of sport. Bye-bye.